Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and happy holidays in advance. And for the record, my name is Norma Camacho, and I'm chair of the Los Angeles Regional Water Board. And today is Thursday, December 19th, and it is 9 a.m., and this meeting is called to order. And for people who only want to listen to or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available. There is a direct link to the webcast on the meeting agenda posted on our website. In addition, we are receiving presentations and public comment through a Zoom meeting platform and in person. For people who want to listen or watch the meeting in Spanish, we have Spanish interpretation services available through the Zoom platform. Instructions are shown on the slide, and I'll ask Mr. Aldo Renteria to come up to the podium to explain how to participate in Spanish.
Thank you, Chair Camacho. I will go ahead and provide instructions in Spanish. Muy buenos días a todos ustedes. El día de hoy se proporcionan servicios de interpretación. Si nos acompaña en línea, favor de ir a la parte inferior de su pantalla, presione el icono de un mundo y una vez que lo presione aparecerá español. Elija español y poner audio en silencio. Si el día de hoy usted nos acompaña aquí en la sala, a favor de pasar en la parte de atrás para que le demos un dispositivo y pueda participar en la reunión. Si tiene algún problema técnico, favor de alzar su mano y con gusto lo apoyaremos. Muchas gracias y que tengan una buena reunión. Back to you, Chair Camacho. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Renteria. And so please note that for all Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board meetings, there is no expectation of privacy regarding any communications. Meetings are recorded and names of participants are listed in the Zoom form. Participation in a recorded meeting will be deemed consent to be recorded. And I just want to make another note that our newest board member, unfortunately, Board Member Rodriguez, has resigned as of November 4th, 2024. And so regretfully, he is not here today. And so going on to our items, I want to first go to roll call. And our board clerk, Helen Rowe, is out today. And filling in for her is Ms. Valerie Aguirre. And so please continue with our roll call.
Okay, thank you. Board Member Ashton?
Present.
Board Member Christensen?
Present.
Chair Camacho?
Present.
Vice Chair Nahai?
Here.
And Board Member Mendez?
Here.
The roll call is complete. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we do have a quorum. And so moving on to item number two, the order of agenda, I'm going to ask our executive officer, Ms. Arredondo, if there are any changes to the order of agenda.
Hi, Chair. Hi, Board. Yes, there are some changes to the agenda. Item 9 and 11 are being postponed for a later board meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So next, we're moving on to item number three, is approval of the draft minutes for October 24, 2024. Are there any changes or additions to the minutes? And if not, could I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Okay, Vice Chair Nahai, and there's a second?
Second.
Okay, and Board Member Christensen. And then if we could have a roll call vote, Ms. Aguirre.
Board Member Ashton?
Yes.
Chair Camacho?
Yes.
Board Member Mendez?
Abstain.
Motion carries.
I think we need to ask Board Member Christensen and Vice Chair Nahai as well.
Board Member Christensen?
Yes.
And Vice Chair Nahai?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Just clarify, abstaining because I was not at the October meeting.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. So we'll move on to board member communications. And I first want to ask any board members if there have been any ex parte communication disclosures that need to be reported. I'm not seeing any. Okay. And so we'll go on to item number 4B, and are there any items of general interest? And I'll start with Board Member Ostrian.
All right, great to be here with everyone. Happy holidays. I hope everyone has a nice holiday and new year.
The only thing that I was going to report is that the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission, which I serve on for this board, as well as with our Assistant Executive Officer Jenny Newman, the meetings were on the second Thursday of the month. Next year, they're going to be on the third Thursday every other month. If people would like to attend those, they are held in Marina Del Rey. And that's it for me. Happy holidays. And we'll see you for the retreat, board retreat in January.
Go ahead.
Nothing much from me, but happy holidays to everybody here. That's it.
Okay. Vice Chair?
Nothing for me except for wishing everybody wonderful holidays and a very happy new year.
Board Member Mendez?
Yes, happy holidays. I'm happy to be back here. I was absent previously for some work obligations in Washington, D.C. and New York. But just two reports since I last saw you. I attended California Safe Schools panel in, I believe, October. This is a NGO that promotes environmental stewardship in public schools, particularly in Los Angeles Unified. And I had the opportunity to be on that panel with the new DTSC director, Catherine Butler. So really looking forward to having a strong relationship with our counterpart at the state level as well. And also a report that I was recently appointed to the Public Policy Institute of California, which is one of California's premier think tanks, nonpartisan think tanks, and look forward to providing updates. They have a very strong water center as well, economic center, and of course a higher education policy center. And that's all I have to report. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead, Vice Chair.
All right. Okay. Well, I'll report on two things. Well, first, I should tell everyone that that I was honored by the governor's decision to reappoint me to the Water Board. The next step is Senate confirmation, another step that we all have to go through, or appointees to the water boards. So I'll report on that. And then secondly, on November 13th, Chair Camacho and I, together with our EO and our AEO, Susana Arredondo and Jenny, did a tour of the AES facility in Long Beach. It took a number of hours, but it was truly informative for us to see the progress that the facility and the company are making in terms of water improvements, but also the on the energy side, to see the advances that are being made for energy storage and towards decarbonization. So anything to add on that?
No. What I would have to say, I highly recommend that all of us go on tours to really see these facilities. It gives us a better understanding of their operation and a connection with the people who are working there as well. And it gives us a sense of scale also, too. I was really surprised that the AES Alamitos facilities was as large as it was. And so, but there was a lot of good information that was provided, and it looks like they were doing a lot of progressive, they have some very progressive ideas on climate change, and so really happy to see that going on as well, too. And so I'd also like to report that right after that tour, I did go to the Safe Clean Water Rock meeting on November 13th, and then also went to a subsequent Rock meeting on December 11th. And so we are making progress in our working group to continue to outline targets for the many water quality targets for the many watershed areas. And so the discussion keeps continuing. And so that'll be great. And so the next meeting is going to be in January. And so we'll see how things roll out then. And so with that, if nobody has anything else to add, that concludes our board member communications. And so I want to turn to item number 5, which is our executive officer's report. Ms. Arredondo.
Thank you, Chair. I do have a few updates for the board. On October 18th, 2024, the Los Angeles Water Board approved a $1,662,743 settlement with the City of Los Angeles, LA Sanitation and Environment, LA San. The settlement resolves a 1.7 million gallon sewage spill into the Los Angeles River that prompted local officials to close multiple beaches. LA San agreed to pay $12,743 to the State Water Resource Control Board cleanup and abatement account, with the remaining penalty amount to fund two supplemental environmental projects, SEPs. LA San agreed to perform the East 6th Street Green Infrastructure Corridor Project. The project is a wet weather project designed to capture, treat, and infiltrate stormwater runoff from a 49.6-acre drainage area in Boyle Heights. The project cost the project cost $1.5 million, with the remaining $75,000 to fund a SEP. The Rose Foundation will administer the SEP for the Council for Watershed Health. On October 25th, 2024, the Los Angeles Water Board approved a $201,000 settlement with Long Beach Generation LLC for effluent limits exceedances to its National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit. Long Beach Generation LLC agrees to pay $39,000 to the State Water Resource Control Board cleanup and abatement account. The remaining $162,000 will fund two SEPs administered by the Rose Foundation and implemented by the San Gabriel Valley Conservation Corps and Heal the Bay. On Sunday, November 17, 2024, Susana Lagudas, the Los Angeles Water Board's Public Participation, Environmental Justice, and Tribal Coordinator, and I attended a dedication ceremony and plaque unveiling in honor of the late Chief Ernie Salas of the Kish Gabrielino Band of Mission Indians. His son, Chairman Andrew Salas, along with Native Sons of the Golden West, dedicated the plaque at the Plaza Park across the San Gabriel Mission and San Gabriel City Hall. The plaque honors Chief Ernie's respected efforts with the Native American community, local residents, civic leaders, and businesses. It highlights his dedication to preserving the history, culture, and challenges of his people, as well as his genealogical records and accomplishments. Chief Ernie's ancestors and indigenous people of the region labored for 34 years under harsh conditions imposed by the Spanish to construct the Mission San Gabriel Archangel. It was an honor to attend the ceremony and reaffirm our commitment to building trust and strengthening the relationship with tribes in our region. This concludes my report.
Thank you very much. Any comments or questions? None? Mm-hmm. So we will continue to move on or move through the agenda. Item number 6 is our update from the State Water Board. And we do have board member Laurel Firestone that's available virtually. Good morning. Oh, I think you're muted.
I'm sorry, try one more time.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, oh, yes, yay.
All right, well, thanks everyone for your patience. And I think another reason it would be nice to be there in person, but I'm glad that that worked. I hope you all have a great holidays and new year. Just a few updates from the State Board. We marked the 50th anniversary of the Safe Drinking Water Act on December 16th. And there's actually a really great website commemorating many of the things that have been achieved and big milestones and statements from folks across the industry. And we had a resolution from Senator John Laird designating December 16th as Safe Drinking Water Act Day. It's always nice to celebrate things, just as we're also, of course, still looking at how to continue to work towards that promise of human right to water and safe drinking water in the many years ahead. So we've been doing a lot on the San Francisco Bay, San Joaquin, Sacramento, San Joaquin Delta watershed. So we've held four workshops, I believe, and we have another one in January on our proposed update. And we also have two processes moving forward with our administrative hearings office on Delta Conveyance Project and the site's project authority. We will, that will continue into the new year. We have been also focusing a lot on SGMA implementation, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. We, for the first time, we canceled our January 7th hearing for proposed designation of the Cahuilla subbasin as a probationary basin. So we can schedule a new probationary hearing at a later date. But if we did, we would notice that at least 90 days in advance. But the Cahuilla subbasin released an amended plan, and the revised versions of the amended plans submitted on October 3rd. After a high-level preliminary review, those amended plans have seen really substantial progress on how they address the deficiencies. And so we're canceling the hearing so that staff can do a more thorough review of the plans to fully determine if the deficiencies are sufficient to achieve groundwater sustainability. So that's exciting to see folks really rolling up their sleeves. And I'm hopeful that this may be the first one that we don't have to take into probation. We also have a probationary hearing scheduled for February 20th for the Kern County subbasin. And I know that there is a new version of that plan that staff are doing a high level review of now. We are also looking, doing a number of things to look at setting or at least considering and looking for public input and scientific basis report for in-stream flows. We held a workshop in November on Mill Deer and Antelope Creeks. And we are also considering emergency regulations renewal in the Scott and Shasta watersheds. On the funding side, our SAFER program had our last meeting of the year for advisory group, and we also just appointed new advisory group members. And we held a workshop on the Clean Water State Revolving Fund and Drinking Water State Revolving Fund policy amendments. So proposed amendments, we had a workshop on that, and public comments were due, and we'll consider an update to those policies in the new year. That sets the policies for then the annual intended use plan, which is really the fundable list of projects. I think those were the main things that I wanted to highlight, but I would be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from board members? Okay. Yeah, we'll start with Board Member Mendez.
Board Member, happy holidays. It's great to see you again, and always so happy that you're representing us up there in Sacramento, and you're so busy and doing such great work, particularly on SGMA. I had a more broad question about thinking forward with the changes in Washington, D.C. in the administration. I know the State Board has been through this already before, but are any information on how vulnerable we are and are some of our federal laws and state laws, those intersections with this new administration?
Yeah, it's certainly something we've been looking at, but I think one of the main areas in the past that had come up was around was really impacted by the Sackett decision with the Supreme Court. And so since that already happened with the Supreme Court, we've been really bolstering up the protections that exist at the state level, regardless of the reduced protections at the federal level. And so for that area, I think we just expect to continue to have to really focus on those state protections. That'll be true for most most things. That I think the good news in our area is that we have strong state laws that can step in and be more protective, even if the federal ones roll back. But you know, there's also trends that have been happening before around reduction in funding for on the federal side for our state revolving funds and for infrastructure. So that's just really unpredictable. That was happening before, you know, obviously that's Congress, not the executive, but, you know, certainly we are impacted by the federal side, but we have a lot of options for state protections. And I guess the last area, just from my experience, that we really saw was around 401 certifications for hydropower facilities. And I expect that to also, that and maybe some biological opinions on endangered species acts and things like that to come up. But hopefully, I think, you know, it's really, I think, remains to be, obviously nobody can fully predict what will happen. And I am hopeful that we can at least focus on certainly what the protections we have here, and also I think on infrastructure funding, just like in many other sectors, the water and wastewater and sectors are just so reliant on public funds, and that has been dwindling for a long time, and it would be nice to see a change in that.
Sure. Thank you.
Vice Chair.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Board Member. As always, a very comprehensive and informative presentation. We truly appreciate it every time that you take the time to speak with us. So, well, first of all, on the incoming administration and you know what we can possibly expect, you know, perhaps during the WQCC or at some point, it would be good for the regional boards to, I mean, it's not just about, you know, arming ourselves and you know and relying on the Port of Cologne and state laws and so on. It's about really what we can expect to come down the pike. And I think that if there can be some kind of a brainstorming session on that issue, I think it would be very, very helpful. Secondly, Board Member, on SGMA, you know, it just seemed to me, and I heard about the postponement of the probation hearing. And you just told us that there is progress being made in terms of compliance and so on. So does that tell us that really SGMA, even though it was 2014, 10 years ago that the law was enacted, that we're actually seeing it work? From your perspective, are we seeing it actually function in the way that it was ultimately intended to, with the interplay between between WDR and the state board and so on? Can you just give us a little bit of your perspective on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, of course there's always things, you know, we wish could go faster and smoother, but I think you're right that this is really a clear of how having a state and regulatory backstop is helpful for helping locals get to a place where they can wrestle with these really difficult things that really, you know, there just isn't the political will or ability to resolve without a strong backstop. And so CAWEA is an example where local leadership really was able to dig in and do that and come up with really strong demand management and mitigation programs and monitoring programs in a way that the first or second or third time around, they weren't able to. But I think this is an example of how we get to a place where there's still able to be local management and, you know, really optimizing what makes sense for that region, but that it's, you know, held to a standard of sustainability. So it's, you know, we're still doing the full analysis, and there's more to see, but it's really promising. And I think it's exactly that. It gives me a lot of optimism that this model can work. These are really, really huge, huge changes in water use that impact the whole area and are really challenging issues. So, you know, in some way, and these areas have had to come up with whole new governance structures, models, you know, well inventories, like a huge amount of science and data and understanding, and then really tough plans. So I do think it's understandable that things didn't happen overnight, but I think it's really promising that we'll see more that are able to follow suit. It's also nice to have kind of a model in this area of things that do pass muster. Because a lot of the area that was put on probation was all in, you know, the San Joaquin Valley, which is just the toughest areas in terms of the overdraft that we have and the rates of cuts that need to be made. So it's nice to feel like there's folks that have been able to put together a plan and that the, you know, and get the support of the local stakeholders to come up with something that everyone can live with.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Yeah, and again, thank you, Board Member Firestone, for your very thoughtful remarks and all of this really good information from a broader level. Really helps us in developing, a fuller lens of how we should approach things locally here in Region 4. So thanks again, and you have a happy holiday.
Thank you. You too.
And so with that, we're going to move on to public forum, item number 7. And so, again, just as a reminder, each speaker will have 3 minutes to address the board unless additional time was approved in advance. And I just want to note that comments during public forum should be on items that are not pending or scheduled to appear on the future agenda and which are not otherwise on today's agenda. And so we are going to first, let's see, let me look at my public forum. And I do have an in-person speaker, and that is going to be Walter Lamb. And you will have 6 minutes.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Camacho, Vice Chair Nye, board members. I'm Walter Lamb, representing the Bino Wetlands Land Trust. We just celebrated our 30th year of advocating for the Bino Wetlands. We've been doing this for quite a while. I do appreciate the additional time today. I'm going to try to use it to save time down the road. I sometimes find that a little bit extra time up front can save a lot of time moving forward. If I could get the next slide, please. I came to your November 2022 meeting 25 months ago, and I had a simple request at that meeting, which is for you to use your regulatory authority just to get to the bottom of what's going on with the Bino Wetlands restoration project. And several board members spoke up in support of, you know, getting more information. Vice Chair Nahai, that was the meeting at which you said that this has bedeviled this region for way too long, and whether you inquired whether there was any light at the end of the tunnel, and that this was not as close to resolution as you thought was owed to the people of our region. And I appreciated those comments. 25 months later, we're trying to understand, because what we're seeing is we've gone backwards, not forwards, but backwards in that 25 months. And so if any of you feel that we're any closer to resolution, please share that information with us, because we're seeing the opposite. In fact, I believe you got an internal memo from your legal counsel saying that there's now no timeline. There was a timeline, and that timeline has now disappeared. So that's not, to us, a good sign. But if you're seeing something different, please let us know. And we'd like to know, what leadership can this board now provide to ensure the people of this region start to see measurable, and I really want to underscore measurable. There's been a lot of talk and back and forth and cryptic answers. It's been frustrating for us because we come with very specific questions. We do not get specific answers. And we just heard board member Firestone talk about the value of a regulatory backstop helping. That's what you do, is you actually help other agencies, right? You're not really being adversarial. That regulatory backstop helps them make sure they're moving forward. And I think that's what we need. And we're just still confused as to why there's such strenuous aversion to something as basic as a schedule. I've been in very few situations where anyone thought a schedule and a plan would be a bad thing. If we go to the next slide, please. And so, again, two very simple asks for today's meeting. And I want to say this won't be something where, for the next 20 years, I'll be coming to these meetings. We feel like we've been extremely patient, but today we're asking for two simple things: to acknowledge or dispute the need for a federal EIS, Environmental Impact Statement, which is not CEQA, it's not an EIR, it's an EIS, and what the impact of the project would be. Because what we're seeing is staff has never mentioned an EIS in any of these meetings, and we're looking for a really clear answer. Is one needed or not? And then the other thing would be we would ask you to direct staff to develop an implementation plan and schedule. You promised you would do it in 2012. We've seen no downside. We see no reason to not have the schedule can say whatever it wants. We're not telling you what to put into the schedule. We would just like to have a schedule showing how the TMDLs, how we come into compliance at some point. Is that 20 years? Is it 50 years? Whatever that schedule is. Next slide, please. And so we did get a letter from your staff saying that they weren't going to create a schedule, that it wasn't warranted. And I'll talk a little bit about that in just a second. An EIS is required for this project, right? I don't mean to ask the question and say we know the answer. What we're asking for is for you to confirm or dispute that. But your staff told us the only time they've ever mentioned an EIS is they said they had no opinion as to whether or not one was required. To us, that's problematic, because if there's something that's required to come into compliance with the TMDL, and we happen to know, because this is what we do, that's the biggest obstacle. That's why they haven't done anything in over 5 years now since the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers dropped out. So the whole point of an implementation plan and schedule, and again, I'm quoting off of your website, it's not my opinion, is to make sure you know all the actions that are needed to get where you want to go, and then at least a rough idea of when those actions, when those milestones will be met. Next slide, please. And again, I hate to talk about this. We really just want to work collaboratively. For 25 months, we've been trying to work within this system, but we think that the letter that your staff sent to us saying, here's why we're not going to create a plan or schedule, we do believe that that's palpably unreasonable and arbitrary. And the reason why is, first, we know that you're authorized to do a plan. We know that you're not mandated to do a plan, so that puts you into that area where you can exercise your discretion. You have to do that based on a reasonable set of facts. If we go to the next slide, please. And here, I want to do a little disclaimer. So in the heading that I wrote for this is staff determination is based on demonstrably false narratives. I, again, want to be respectful here, but also firm. Anybody can write demonstrably false narratives on a slide. That doesn't mean anything. And I just want to be clear. Again, we've been doing this for about 30 years. We know we can prove these things based on a very clear set of evidence. I'm not going to go into all of them, but I do want to talk about the first one, because the CEQA litigation is not what delayed compliance with the TMDLs. That's becoming a little bit bothersome for us because it makes us look bad. The idea is, the narrative apparently, is that we come to these meetings to complain about a delay that we caused. We did not cause this delay. The delay was the flood control error and now the inability to get federal permits. That's why we keep talking about the federal EIS. Next slide, please. I know I'm running out of time here. Again, I'm going to say this again, and I did. I appreciated the conversation at a previous meeting about the receipts. And that's all I'll just say. We have the receipts. There's a lot of evidence out there. Next slide, please. I think we're getting close to the end. So again, just to repeat, I know I'm out of time, so thank you very much. We hope you can do something today, and we can move forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And so I just want to turn to our legal table here to talk about the question number one, that was the need for the EIS and the response that was provided. And so maybe just some background on the communication that was sent over to the Beyond the Creek folks.
I don't think that's necessarily a question. The letter came from Jenny Newman. As far as the EIS, a discussion I had with Fish and Wildlife, it's been put on hold, and that's the only information I have as far as that. Jenny, do you have any stats?
I agree with what Amelia said, and Mr. Lamb was quoting an email from me where he asked me, confirm or deny whether an EIS is needed, and I said, we don't have an opinion, staff doesn't have an opinion, and what I meant by that was, we are subject to CEQA in our actions as a regional board, and so not NEPA, and so whether or not we have an opinion as to, our opinion as to whether or not an EIS is needed is irrelevant, because EISs are not needed or not our authority. There is no action before the board. If the restoration project moves forward and needs permit, it will be subject to CEQA. And so that's why I said that we didn't have an opinion about whether an EIS was needed for the project. To be clear, Mr. Lamb says we should care that an EIS is needed because it delay, like the delay of the project delays the TMDL. And I understand that is what his he's clarified what he meant by that question. And so my original response was not related to that aspect of his question.
Okay, thank you. And so just another question I had is, right now, is the uncertainty mostly focused on Fish and Wildlife at this point? Where is the, I guess, where is this delay really being centered upon? What are we all still waiting for?
So Fish and Wildlife adopted a plan and an EIR for that plan, that restoration plan, and the EIR, and here's where I'm not going to speak perfectly, and Amelia can correct me, but parts of it were overturned in court related to some calculations regarding flood control, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the other matter at this point. So Fish and Wildlife needs to revise the EIR in response to the court order, and that is where the delay is right now. Fish and Wildlife was planning on moving forward with the previous EIR, but now needs to redo the EIR.
And another aspect of it is that they had a grant to move forward, and in the time of litigation, they lost that funding, and so right now they do not have funding in order to move forward.
Any other comments from any board members?
Yeah.
Vice Chair?
Mr. Lamb has spoken to us a number of times virtually and is here in person, and I can hear the frustration in his voice, because he believes that there are things that we can do at the regional board that are not being done, and this is what is causing consternation for him and the group that he represents. And I still stand by my comments that Mr. Lamb put up at the beginning of his presentation, although they did make me feel that I should take a vow of silence for a while as well. But I think that we owe him a definite statement as to what our position is, so that he doesn't let me just finish. So that he doesn't feel the need to keep coming back to us with basically the same argument, which we've heard from him virtually a number of times and now in person. So if it is indeed our position, as I gather, that until the court issue is resolved, and until we have a court order that says that there's a restoration plan that is going to go forward and an EIR is going to be prepared, until that time, legally, our hands are tied to do anything more. If that's our position, then we should tell him that, and be done with it, so that he doesn't continually feel that this board is somehow not, you know, performing its function as a regulatory body. Now, you know, that can be expressed to him in writing, but I think we need to make that very clear. I mean, I think from the board's point of view, if indeed it is within our power and we're not legally restrained from acting, you know, for the benefit of the Bayona wetlands and the community, both people and wildlife that benefit from it, then we should act. I think we would all agree on that. So I think Mr. Lam thinking that somehow we're reluctant to act, I think that needs to be cleared up for him.
Okay, Vice Chair Nahai, we did send Mr. Lam a written response on October 22nd, where we laid all that out. We explained why we felt that the existing restoration plan was an appropriate mechanism to implement the TMDL, that we staff are not recommending adopting a separate state implementation plan for the previously EPA adopted TMDL because we felt like it wasn't needed, because there is a restoration plan in place that could move forward that would implement the TMDL. And we sent that letter on October 22nd. Even before that, we had a board workshop where we talked about this, and staff in spring 2023, and staff conveyed the same message. So we documented staff's recommendation in this October 22nd, 2024 letter. We can send it to the board. I think Mr. Lam has, that's what he's saying. Staff's decision in that letter and that recommendation is cause for action on his organization's part. So that's what he was, I think, saying. So in answer to your question, staff feels like we did respond to Mr. Lam. We sent him a letter and documented the reasons why that we're not recommending an implementation plan.
All right. If you have some time, send me that October 22nd.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yes. If you could send that to all of the board members, that would be great, so we have a good understanding. Yes. And I'm wondering, for the future, is it possible maybe to ask Fish and Wildlife to kind of put them on the agenda to see what progress has been made sometime next year in 2025, just so that we know if anything has changed or if it isn't going to change. And if we don't see any movement in 2025, we should clearly understand that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there will be much change in what update Fish and Wildlife provided you at that 2023 workshop, because since then the court has overturned the EIR and they can't move forward. And so we'll request Fish and Wildlife to give an update, though. I'll specifically say one of the reasons we say we don't want to recommend doing an implementation plan for this TMDL is because we don't think if we adopt an implementation plan, it will make the project happen any faster. An implementation plan is a plan in our basin plan. It is not, you know, self-enforcing. It just lays out a schedule. It does not prescribe the manner of compliance. The board adopting an implementation plan wouldn't be like the board approving anything that was different than what Fish and Wildlife is proposing. So I don't know that us adopting an implementation plan would help Fish and Wildlife move any faster. So that's one of the reasons. But we'll reach out to Fish and Wildlife and ask them if they can come and make an update to the board.
So I think we would appreciate that, Jenny, if they could. But we also just heard from council that funding has somehow dried up. And what does that mean? Does that mean, therefore, that they're not pursuing the court case because they don't have the funds to do that? And then where does that leave the poor, silent, voiceless Bayona wetlands that is degrading every day? So I think we, again, that's not within this board's control, but I think we would certainly like to hear from Fish and Wildlife. So what is Plan B if there is now a funding issue with respect to continuing whatever it is that the court requires? I think it would be difficult for the community to hear that everybody's just thrown up their hands and nothing's happening. That can't be right.
I believe from speaking to council at Fish and Wildlife that the grant funding and future grant funding are on hold because of the budget crisis. And the hope is that once the budget crisis is resolved, that they will have the funding. But as of now, they do not have a timeline, but they have not given up. They are still trying to pursue funding, but until they have that ability to pursue funding, they can't move forward. But they have not given up on pursuing funding.
Okay, I think all the more reason why we should invite them to come and talk to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree as well, especially on this funding issue. And in many respects, in terms of TMDL compliance for a lot of permittees out there, funding is not something that usually allows you a buy. So I think we need to figure out a way, and hopefully the budget issue will resolve itself if that's what's standing in the way. But certainly it's a time for some brainstorming to do if it's going to be a problem, and I'd like to hear from them as well. Okay, so with that, we'll move on to our speakers. I think we have a virtual speaker. That's Ray Tahir, Mr. Ray Tahir, for 3 minutes. And so if we could get him on board.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Let's get to the next slide. Next slide. Next slide. There you go. The MS4 permit is defective to a pathological extent and must be voided and rewritten because of the following. First, the current permit was not adopted on July 23rd, 2021, but several days later. What was adopted on this date was a redline version draft that included a second monitoring report proposed by Vice Chair Nahai. The former EO, Rene Purdy, certified that the permit was adopted on July 23rd, which would have been impossible given the number of changes that were needed. Further, Ms. Purdy perjured herself by claiming in her August 9th, 2021 permit certification letter that a full true copy of the permit was adopted on July 23rd. That can't be given that it was a red line draft that was actually adopted. Secondly, the board further erred by failing to schedule a subsequent hearing on the final proposed permit, triggered by the addition of a red line second monitoring report. See below the red line excerpt in the next slide. Next slide, please. Here's what was adopted. Here's an excerpt from the monitoring report that was adopted. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Now, here's the clean version that was said to have been adopted on at the August 19th, or in the August 19th transmittal letter. Next slide, please. Another permit defect, former EO Purdy made a last minute change to the 2021 permit by eliminating permit part BC, which enables the compliance with part VA as a means of achieving compliance with receiving water limitations, which includes water quality status. Part 5A of the permit reads, discharges from the MS4 that cause or contribute to a violation of receiving water limitations are prohibited. And in part, VB discharges from the MS4 stormwater or non-stormwater, which a permittee is responsible, shall not cause or contribute to a condition or nuisance. However, Part BC says that compliance with Part VA and VB is achieved by implementing a stormwater management plan governed by an iterative process. However, and this is very strange, Ms. Purdy, however, added Part X, which cancels Part C of the iterative process. This is something I can't believe it ever happened. Next slide, please. Effectively, Part 10 eliminates receiving water limitations and is a requirement to comply with water quality standards and objectives through the SWMP iterative process. It also eliminates compliance with the 6 core SWMP program elements. Please note that this is a requirement mandated by Water Quality Order 99-5 that was imposed on the California Water Boards by US EPA. This too renders the permit unenforceable and violative of federal and state law, which should void the entire permit. Eliminating Part VC impacts Ventura because, as mentioned the last time, to Ms. Camacho's chagrin, the SWMP determines compliance until a watershed management program is approved. No SWMP for Ventura was ever complied with. Anyway, finally, I don't expect you to do anything about this, but it's something that you're going to have to deal with. That permit is counterfeit. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tahir. And so I just want to ask if there's any other hands raised in the virtual space that need to be part of public comment. And if not, we could move on to our information item.
We have 3 hands raised. Benjamin Harris. You are allowed to speak.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, good morning, board members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Sorry, I wish I could be there in person, but I am not feeling 100% today and didn't want to spread anything around. My name is Ben Harris. I'm the senior staff attorney for Los Angeles Waterkeeper. I just wanted to, you know, make 2 quick points here at public comment. One, I maybe joined the meeting a couple minutes late, but I do want to acknowledge the retirement of Dr. L.B. Nye, who I think has been a great asset for the regional board, and it's been a pleasure joining meetings with her. So I wish her the best in her retirement. And the second point I just wanted to make briefly is that LA Waterkeeper, Gila Bay, and NRDC sent a letter on Friday that outlines some potential SEP projects, which is kind of a continuation of what we had talked about in past board meetings and public forum, just to outline some of the things that we think could be a really suitable target for the board to consider as it, you know, resolves certain enforcement actions. I think there's a lot of great options and viability out there. So we tried to present what we thought were good ideas, as well as what we thought, you know, might actually fit within the state board guidelines. So I would encourage you to take a look at that as we kind of wind down the new year and move forward in trying to resolve some of these, you know, matters in 2025. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much as well. Our next speaker.
Yes, the next speaker is, I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce this correctly, Yael Partes. You are allowed to speak.
I had a question before I speak, if that's okay. Is this the right time to comment regarding item 7A?
No, this isn't. The 7A is coming up next. This is public comment currently.
Got it. Thank you so much.
The next speaker?
Next speaker is Ed Carino. You are allowed to speak.
My first question, can you all hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. Why did District 4 Executive order no further reporting on Bologna Creek bacteria count? Number 2, Where are the up-to-date data on Bologna Creek and Sentinella storm drain bacteria data? Number three, every dry season is tantamount to an airborne toxic event in the Del Rey, Marina Del Rey, and Playa Vista areas due to microaerosols and fungal spores evaporating and getting airborne. These pathogenic aerosols travel miles on air current. This is the equivalent of a salt on the residents' eyes, nose, throat, and lungs. It is a quality of life issue, which can be deadly for some. We need air testing in this region during the dry season. This is all based on anecdotal evidence of pulmonary and sinus distress in residents of the region during the dry season. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Serino. And I think if we could ask staff to contact Mr. Serino with some of the data that has been requested of him, that would be great. Ms. Arredondo?
Yes, we will follow up with him.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Are there any other virtual speakers who would like to speak in public comment?
There are no other raised hands in the queue.
Okay, thank you. So we could move on to our information item, which is item number 7A. And I just want to ask board members, shall we move on or take a break? What is your feeling? Move on? Yes, let's go ahead and move on. I know a lot of people are here for this item. And so we will go ahead. We have a presentation scheduled. It's a presentation by the Save San Pasqual Park on the Arroyo Seco Water Reuse Project. And so thank you very much for being here today, and we're eager to listen.
Thank you, Chairwoman. Good morning. My name is Mark Forbes. I am here on behalf of Save San Pasqual Park. We are a grassroots organization that is in opposition of the Arroyo Seco Water Reuse Project. For sake of time, I'm going to skip a few of these slides. Next slide. To give you a sense of what we're talking about, the Arroyo Seco Water Reuse Project is a joint effort between Pasadena and South Pasadena with a claim to capture and clean water from the Arroyo Seco Channel. There are two sites that will be used to do this in San Rafael and the San Pasqual Basins. Part of the permanent infrastructure that they're planning to build in the San Pasqual Park area is in Los Angeles land, which has been asked to cede to them in perpetuity from recreations and parks. Next slide. The area in question you can see from above has a large tree canopy, and about a quarter of the land itself is in Los Angeles. The rest is in South Pasadena. Next slide. I wanted to give you a sense of the area that we're talking about. This is a natural riparian habitat hosting protected trees, a number of birds, and wildlife. Next slide. As you know, the Arroyo Seco is a large wildlife corridor, and we feel that this should be protected. By destroying these trees, this habitat is going to have a detrimental impact on this wildlife corridor for years to come. Next slide. One of the problems with this project is there have been very poor community outreach by the city of Pasadena and South Pasadena. Letters were sent out in 2023 over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend to approximately 200 families. This map shows that it was within 500 feet of San Pasqual Park. You'll notice that a number of the area it does not have homes in the area. Only 200 families received letters during this time, and that none of this was actually in Spanish. Next slide. Additionally, during the CEQA process of this, the Gabriel and Okish Nation was not consulted, which we believe is a violation of AB 52. Next slide. Additionally, no There were very few public comments. Only two public comments were made during the public comment period. Save San Pasqual Park, in about the past 6 months, have received over 1,000 letters of opposition with several petitions to this project, noting that there are a number of people in the community who do not agree with this, and we'll explain why. This gives a little bit of the historic significance of the parkland that we're talking about. Next slide. This is a hitching post, which is a historic monument in the park. This would be destroyed if this project is done. In contrast, near the area in Pasadena, there is another hitching post. This was probably built around the 1890s. Notice the sign, which says, preserved and maintained as a natural park. We would like the same recognition. Next slide. The environmental impact of this project cannot be understated. The water reduction in the arroyo is going to be significant. This project is, in essence, a diversion to the South Pasadena Golf Course. 20 million gallons of water will be diverted from the Arroyo Seco to the golf course with no benefit to Los Angeles. They're going to destroy the small forest there, which is going to remove a tree canopy of approximately 82% of the trees in the area. They will plan to replant the area, but it's going to take 20 to 50 years for these trees to mature and bestow the same benefits that we currently have. This is going to destroy a natural ecosystem, which is going to take years to recover, and it's going to reduce the quality of life for the people in the area. Next slide. To speak specifically to this board about the water issues, the plan intends to capture 175 million gallons of water, and as I mentioned, divert 20 million gallons of that to the Arroyo Seco. Over half of this water would be captured by South Pasadena, and less than half would be actually put back into the Arroyo Seco after filtering. Additionally, we have questioned the water rights of South Pasadena's diversion of this water. My colleagues have reached out to the State Water Board, disputing their claim that they have rights to this water, and we were told that we would hear back within 1 to 2 weeks. It has been 3 months since we have heard back from the State Water Board about South Pasadena's water rights. Based on their database, we do not feel that they have water rights to divert this water to the golf course. Next slide. This gives you an example of the tree canopy that will be destroyed in the area. All of the highlighted trees will be taken out, approximately 82% of these trees. And the ones in red and orange are protected sycamores and oaks. Some of these trees are over 50 feet tall, and were probably planted around the time when the Arroyo Seco was put in the 1940s. These trees provide a huge amount of heat reduction, pollution reduction, and provide a beautiful riparian habitat for fish and wildlife in this area, as well as a respite for people in the park. Next slide, please. An entire ecosystem is going to be lost. We have some pictures of the birds and the wildlife. It should be noted that this riparian habitat could also be home to the least bell vireo, which is an endangered bird species. While it has not been seen in the San Pasqual area, it has been seen in other local areas in Los Angeles. So I want to make that a specific note, that this will be lost if this project goes through. Next slide, please. Based on the mitigated negative disclosure that Pasadena has produced, saying that there's going to be little to no significant impact, we disagree. We feel that it's impossible to say that this project will have no significant impact on the area. We feel that a complete and independent environmental impact report is required. In addition, this project has been piecemealed. There is plans to do a $25 million reconstruction to the South Pasadena Golf Course, of which this is integral to maintain the water. 20 million gallons will be diverted annually to this golf course. The permit that is before you from Pasadena for this states that the water rights, they have a water rights that has lasted for years. We do not feel that they do have those water rights. Additionally, I have seen the plans for the golf course, this $25 million plan, and they will be asking for another $400,000 from the Safe Clean Water Act to build artificial wetlands. So they're using the water from this project to water the golf course, and then they're going to ask for more money to build these artificial wetlands on the golf course. This does not benefit Los Angeles in any way. It actually benefits a small few in South Pasadena who like to golf. We feel that this is going to have a significant impact not only on the wildlife, but the public, the indigenous community, the history, the archaeology in the area. 2 years of construction in this area is going to create noise, pollution, and a destruction to the entire area. Eliminating the water flow and the interconnectedness of the trees and the wildlife will destroy the ecosystem that currently exists, and it's going to take 20 to 50 years for this to recover after this is done. Next slide, please. We feel that this park and natural spaces are public assets and should be treated as such. It's crucial for any decisions regarding these spaces to involve public input, which was not done properly. It needs to respect the local and indigenous perspectives and safeguard personal connections to this park and all its living creatures. It's the obligation of those responsible for preserving public park lands to ensure that these natural resources are safeguarded for current and future generations. I appreciate your time. And if you would like to discuss this with us further, we would be happy to do that. Next slide, please. Thank you for helping us save this park.
Thank you very much. And if you could hang out here as we may have some questions, but I'll go on to my next speaker, which is Dawn Petschauer from the City of Pasadena. If you could come to the podium.
Good morning, actually, still. Madam Chair, board members, members of the public. Apologize for my squeaky voice. Doesn't like these cool mornings. Dawn Petschauer, Stormwater Program Administrator for the City of Pasadena.
And good morning. My name is Danielle Garcia. I am the Water Conservation Management Analyst for the City of South Pasadena.
So we are speaking today on behalf of the cities of Pasadena and South Pasadena with respect to the Arroyo Seco Water Reuse Project, a collaboration consisting of two regional stormwater capture treatment facilities with trail and public access components proposed in public open spaces areas adjacent to the Arroyo Seco Channel. The proposed project is being pursued to meet critical water quality compliance for the Arroyo Seco and the Los Angeles River as required by this regional board, pursuant to the LA River TMDL compliance goals, as they will require, and will require a Section 401 water quality certification from the board to implement. The Arroyo Seco Reuse Project is an exceptional water quality improvement project approved and fully funded through LA County Safe Clean Water Program, Measure W, as well as Proposition 68, which is the California Parks and Water Bond Act that uses nature-based solutions designed to achieve regional water quality objectives. The City of Pasadena is the CEQA end project lead, received a CEQA lawsuit regarding the project, and has paused the Section 401 permit application submitted to the board in the interim. We are aware of the concerns raised and emphasize we take community input seriously and remain committed to prioritizing input and fostering transparency in our decision-making process. The joint Arroyo Seco Water Reuse Project represents a significant opportunity for improving water quality while achieving ecological restoration in the region. By advancing water treatment, storage, and reuse capabilities, the project directly aligns with Prop 68 and Measure W, which prioritize sustainable water management, community resilience, and enhanced natural stream restoration. Beyond its water-related components, the project also aims to reestablish and enhance native plant communities, expand park amenities, including a new nature-focused trail with interpretive signage, improve public access, and create educational opportunities to raise awareness about resiliency and environmental stewardship, which is serving as a model for sustainable water management and community enrichment. Pasadena and South Pasadena are jointly committed to prioritizing community and perspectives and intend to move forward with this effort in a way that serves compliance, ecological restoration, and earns community support. We thank you for your time and consideration of our input and look forward to working collaboratively with the board as we continue our path towards compliance. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And before we have questions, we have a few other speakers I'd like to hear from. And one is, I think it's Tim Brick or T. Brick. Okay, Tim. And with the stewards of Arroyo Seco, please come to the podium. Good morning.
Thank you, and I have some slides if they could cue them up. Very pleased to be here today to say hello and to tell you about the context of this project and to put the project really in context of the restoration of the Arroyo Seco and of the Los Angeles River and the protection and restoration of endangered species, particularly steelhead. So the Arroyo Seco is key to the restoration of steelhead on the LA River system. And there's been several recent studies in the last 5 years which have really established that this is the key place on the LA River system. If we're ever going to bring back steelhead, which I know is a distant goal, we need to take actions now, and actions are being taken in order to do that. Next slide, please. This is a news release from the Department of Fish and Wildlife, which conducted a survey in the Arroyo Seco this summer in June, and then they issued this news release in July and found at least 4,000 native rainbow trout in the Arroyo Seco. A rather astounding find, as a matter of fact. Next slide, please. This is a picture of the storms that we had and the large collection of water that came in recent years at Devil's Gate Dam, which is basically the barrier that has kept fish in the mountains from moving into the larger part of the LA River system. Now, rainbow trout have been passing through, and we can document that, through this dam. So in fact, it is not a final barrier. And particularly given the passage of provisions that the rainbow trout, who are not behind barriers, are now listed as endangered by the state of California, in addition to the historical U.S. designation of trout, rainbow trout, steelhead, as an endangered species going back to 1997. Next slide, please. So that changes the whole context of what goes on in the Arroyo Seco. We are building, together with the agencies involved, Department of Fish and Wildlife, Wildlife Conservation Board, Corps of Engineers, County of Los Angeles, lots, and particularly the City of LA, we're building a steelhead corridor from the San Gabriel Mountains to downtown Los Angeles. Next slide, please. The Los Angeles Bureau of Engineering is now moving ahead with the Los Angeles River Ecosystem Restoration and Recreation Reach 8A project. This is the initial step to link the main stem of the Los Angeles River to the excellent conditions and habitat found in the Los Angeles River tributaries, particularly the Arroyo Seco and Tahunga Wash. This project is moving ahead, and it doesn't make any sense at all if it doesn't end up connecting the river to the tributaries. Is that?
You can go ahead. Continue, please.
All right. I just have a few more. I tried to be concise. Next slide, please. I want to say that I subscribe and support the Save San Pasqual Park people. And the best way to save it is to put it in the context of restoring the Arroyo Seco, the entire Arroyo Seco, the 11 miles in the urban stretch in particular. what's wrong with this project. It's not a nature-based approach. It really isn't. It's small little projects that actually will be barriers and illegal diversions from the stream. South Pasadena does not have a water right. They've not been able to produce any evidence that truly documents that. The Arroyo Seco is listed by the state board as a fully appropriated stream. There's no water to divert for them. There's been inadequate outreach to the public. The failure to consult indigenous people is a terrible blow. There's a lot of environmental justice aspects to this project that haven't been taken into consideration. And you might be able to guess immediately what they are. With South Pasadena and Pasadena imposing a project on a very wonderful little community there at San Pascual. There's also a failure to treat pollution at the source, so there's really problems with the whole way that the project is constructed. There's a failure to do a proper hydrology study. It's not a water reuse project. Contemplate that for a while. Where's their water reuse in the traditional sense with regard to this project? They're going to do a treatment of a stream that needs to be treated, but they're not putting water back into the stream. So it's not really improving the health of the stream itself. And there's also, the main impact of the project is going to be that a golf course is going to receive free water, treated water. This is not a legitimate purpose at this time. It violates Los Angeles parkland, and there's also a failure to incorporate previous planning that's been going on for many years for the restoration of the Arroyo Seco. I remember receiving the David Nahai Award, as a matter of fact, in 2006 for a related project with regard to the restoration of the Arroyo Seco. So it's wonderful to see you here today, David. Thank you very much. That's basically it. We could go into a lot of detail on all of these. I know you don't have time for that at this point, but we just want to say that there's always been a tremendous movement for a long time to restore the Arroyo Seco, and it's time to do so now. And Los Angeles' step in moving forward with the Reach 8 project is really a historic step towards restoring the key species in the LA River system, the Southern California steelhead. Thanks very much for your time and attention.
Thank you very much. We do have another in-person speaker, and that's Ms. Clara Solis from the Save San Pascual Park.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm a resident of the San Pascual Valley neighborhood where the San Pascual site is located, speaking in opposition to the project application. I too attended the dedication for Chief Solis. Chairman Solis, Chief Solis's son, spoke out on his concerns about this project and the importance of the land at the San Pascual area site to the Gabrieliano Quiche on a KCAL segment. It is not clear from the application, which I now understand is on pause, which has been submitted to you in October, that the half acre of the San Pascual site is on Los Angeles Recreation and Park land and is a part of San Pascual Park. This park land that has been used by residents of the San Pascual neighborhood since the Arroyo Seco was first channelized. It's a place where residents can appreciate nature. Wildlife uses this small forest as habitat and for connectivity. Our neighborhood, which has dozens of apartment buildings whose residents depend on the park, is an environmental justice community. Residents use the park during hot days as the forest is 10 degrees cooler. Our neighborhood is basically in a bowl that sits next to the Arroyo Seco Parkway 110 freeway. Thousands of cars pass by our neighborhood each day. Our neighborhood is impacted by air pollution, including ultrafine particles from brake and tire dust, noise pollution, light pollution, and heat island impacts. Because of its topography, heat and pollution can settle in the community. Noise impacts are apparent during winter months when trees lose their leaves. There is more noise. Our community has been protected by some of these impacts by our large tree canopy. This project will remove 136 trees, including around 40 protected trees and significant trees. Is now, during climate change, the time to be removing these trees when we will be impacted by greater heat in our community? This project, most of the trees are taller than 50 feet. A virtual small forest will be removed. The impacts in terms of air, noise, light, and pollution and heat island impacts on this environmental justice community from the removal of this forest has not been studied in the MND. And that is why we are encouraging a full environmental impact report with alternatives. Per Cal EnviroScreen 4.0, we estimate that 60% of our residents are linguistically isolated, meaning they would not understand a notice in English. Yet the MND on this project's notice was entirely on English with not a line of Spanish. All of the documents were entirely in English without a line in Spanish. Golf courses are notoriously dirty, using large amounts of fertilizer. As I and my children walk the arroyo, we see dozens of golf balls. Contamination should be cleaned at the source. Our LA neighborhood will not see a drop of water from this project. Our use of the park will be restricted. Instead of walking through the forest, we will walk around it, seeing signs about wildlife instead of seeing it firsthand. Our community did not have a say about this project, instead having it imposed upon us. Disadvantaged community funds are being used, but how many in our community can afford golf? Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you very much. And I just wanted to ask if there's any other in-person comment or any comments virtually who have their hand raised. I believe that somebody was online earlier that wanted to speak on this item virtually. Yes. If we could bring her up.
Hello, board. I oppose. My name is Yael Pardes. I oppose the Arroyo Seco Water Reuse Project. Water cleanup cannot come at the cost of destroying a whole unique riparian habitat. We cannot afford to lose any mature, beautiful trees and destroy a wildlife corridor just so a golf course can receive 20 million gallons of free water yearly, while Los Angeles will not get any of that water. It is simply wrong. The community must have a say. The indigenous tribes, who are the heirs of this land, must have a say. The 2015 study on storymap.argis counts weighted exceedance magnitude for E. coli contamination to all the outfall around along the arroyo from the Ahamonga to the LA River. The outfall above San Pascual, all the outfalls, range low from 0 to 20, with the exception of one outfall, number 40, at a high count of 386. But that was in 2015. The number indicate an average which in itself does not point to actual contaminants. In comparison, the LA River outfall contamination numbers can reach into the tens of thousands per outfall. Another water data source is the Watershed Protection Division with dry and wet data from 2015 to 2023. Many outfall numbers did not match the outfall numbers in previous source. The department could not clarify the discrepancy or location. The water was tested at two sources only, the Rose Bowl and the LA River Junction, which again does not tell you where the contamination comes from. It raises question about the project. If the main purpose is to clean the arroyo water, why not directly address the outfalls that drop harmful chemicals or sewage? Why let polluted outfalls into the otherwise clean mountain water and endanger all of us? What is the purpose of dividing the filtration project into two parks instead of creating one comprehensive location that will not require any tree removal and land destruction? Why are zinc and bacteria the only contaminant mentioned by the MND, but without showing actual research data and source link? Why not clean the arroyo water right before the confluence with the LA River?
We request to see an accurate mapped water report for the arroyo on all outfalls above and below San Pascual as part of the comprehensive EIR so that the public and scientific community can pinpoint exactly which outfall are the culprit that should be treated before contamination is unloaded into the river. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And if there aren't any more raised hands in the virtual space.
Hi, Chair. We have one more hand raised. Robert Costa.
Okay, go ahead.
Hello, this is Robert Costa, and I'm a resident of the San Pascual area. My property is adjacent to the arroyo, and I'm very familiar with the natural habitat we have here. I just want to make it clear to everybody that we that live down here have not had any type of communication or notification or any kind of report given to us as to the impact of the project and what they're going to do. I walk the arroyo. And when it rains, I can point out several areas of contamination. We have two major stables right along the area where they say they're going to reclaim this water. And it makes no sense if all they're doing is pouring all their waste into the arroyo. And I see it. And I can point it out to you. And all I ask you people is to really look at everything. Have transparency, let us know what's going on, consult us. You know, we live down here, the impact of this would be major to us in every way. Even the construction would impact this area. This is not a big area, it's widely used, traffic is heavy, and we want to keep this area as pristine as possible. I have lots of wildlife in my property, and they go and come. I even have ducks living in my backyard. I want to thank you for your time. And if there's any questions or anytime you want to see this area, I'd be entertained to show you the area. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If there aren't any more speakers.
Chair, I see Lynn Planbeck online, and she registered to speak, but her hand is not up. She's item 10. Okay, excuse me.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We'll wait for item 10.
Okay, so with that, I just want to make clear that this is not a meeting to approve or deny or modify the project, but it is just to have a conversation and to understand the community concerns that are out there. And so I do have some questions or clarifications for the City of Pasadena so that if they could come back to the podium, that would be great.
Of course, Madam Chair. Aye.
Yes, and so there's a lot of statements here that of concern. One is in regards to water rights, and so I want you to explain that concern that is out there that the city has no water rights, but what are the water rights that have been had and how were they procured?
Sure. So there are two project sites, so I just want to clarify that. For the City of Pasadena, the San Rafael Channel is diverting water from the San Rafael Creek, not from the Arroyo Seco itself, and it is returning water that is treated back to the arroyo. For the San Pascual site, there is a historic diversion in the Arroyo Seco Channel. I'm not a water rights person directly, but my understanding is this, it has been in place since the 1940s. Our project is not looking at diverting any additional dry weather. There's not wet weather flows. We're not asking to divert additional. It's just continuing to use the diverted water that's already been historically diverted to the golf course.
And another question I had is in terms of consultation with the tribes. And so I was wondering if you could talk about that.
Sure. And again, because of the pending lawsuit, I am limited with responding to anything with respect to the CEQA documents themselves, but I can state that we did confer with the Kurtz tribe, the Kurtz Nation, I believe, for over 6 months, and if I'm not mistaken, there is verbiage from them in the documents themselves, but respectfully, I can't comment any further on that based on litigation.
Thank you. And just to clarify on the CEQA documentation, you used a mitigated negative deck as your CEQA document, and I just wanted to, and maybe you can't comment on this, but you did not do a full-blown CEQA analysis then?
Currently, the MND was the pathway that the cities chose to move forward with, yes.
And the justification for that pathway?
Again, with pending litigation, I'm limited, but I believe the idea is that was what was expected based on the Safe Clean Water Program and the project itself.
Okay, thank you. And let's see. And there was a discussion on community communication as well in terms of, you know, bilingual material going out. So was that or was that not done or was that done in a different way?
I was not with the City of Pasadena. I was with the City of L.A. when the project started. But my understanding is that the mailers were done only in English. I do believe there were some Spanish materials that were on the website, but again, I'm not 100% sure on that. And if that, you know, was an error on the city's behalf, we apologize. That's something we're more mindful and should be mindful of, given the climate of our city's adjacentness to LA City.
Yeah, and so with the WASCs that have been developed with Safe Clean Water, is there some ongoing outreach that's occurring with through that forum to reach out to the community in regards to this particular project?
So this project sits in the Upper LA River, River WASC. I'm actually the chair of the Rio Hondo, which our city drains to on the other side. I apologize. So I don't know the extent of the watershed coordinator's input because this was round one of the Safe Clean Water Program. We actually did not have watershed coordinators at that time, so that is something we have now, and I know both of our cities really applaud. They help cities that are smaller and medium-sized like ours be able to extend our outreach, but they were not in place at the time this project was accepted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I don't want to hog all the questions, and so, yes, I'll look to Board Member Christensen.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think that we've heard sort of extensive comments that were pretty consistent from the community here. And my caveat, obviously, is that this is the first time I'm really hearing details about this project, so I don't know what I don't know. And I am not a golfer. I am having a strong reaction to this project because I think it's an example, sort of a microcosm, of sort of really us as a species not having learned our lesson. To hear that you're going to be using public money to recreate riparian habitat, a wetland, after destroying an existing naturally occurring wetland is truly disappointing. And, you know, I'm all for water reuse and recycling. I'm all for figuring out how and where we should be placing infrastructure, and gray infrastructure being a piece of that puzzle. But placing it on a piece of land that not just is beloved by the community, I get that maybe that's not enough of a motive. But in the era of climate change, as one of our other speakers said, you know, the carbon release that will happen from that that project, the carbon drawdown that healthy riparian habitats are actually pretty efficient at, the destruction of mature trees, in a city that is in a state of emergency for extreme heat and pollution is, again, very disappointing. We can't move forward solving things like water quality or water independence by also then harming other pieces of our ecosystem harming our biodiversity that is, you know, at like an existential level of destruction at this point. We don't have time. We don't have time to do piecemeal projects that sort of answer one question but cause a host of other issues. We're out of time, and we have to be approaching every project that we do with a lens of multi-benefit to the community and to nature. Mr. Brick was talking about the return of steelhead trout, and I, as many of you know, ran Friends of the Los Angeles River for a number of years, and steelhead trout was one of our rallying cries too. And I understand that for most people, steelhead trout probably means nothing. You know, why should we care? Why should we give up our water recycling in the name of this species? The point is that as a keystone species in a riparian habitat that has already been wiped off the face of our region, you know, this is representative of bringing additional biodiversity back to the area and starting to repair harm done to our communities and harm done to the very environment that our survival depends on. So I guess all this to say, I think that this community and our environment deserves sort of a reset with this project. I personally would recommend that you go back to the community and effort a little bit more in the outreach and education, particularly bilingually, but approaching it not just from a place of checking the box, but actually wanting to involve people. And the last thing that I'll say is I would hope there's a better reason for implementing this kind of project than to water a golf course. And I think if there's a way to look at different sites that may address some of your same needs without being destructive, that would be a great step forward. Thank you, that's it.
Sure, if I could clarify a few items. I'll try to organize, that was a lot, I appreciate your feedback. To clarify, we've heard a lot about, or I guess take a step back, before we developed Los Angeles, many wetlands existed. We heard a lot about Bayona Creek. I worked for City of LA for 15 years. It's a very important part. Many wetlands do not exist or are inoperable. In the San Rafael site in Pasadena, there is not an existing wetland. We are creating one, which is why Senator Portantino supported us and gave the cities the funding from Prop 68 from the California Parks and Water Bond, because it was specifically earmarked for recreating wetland systems and natural-based systems through partnerships like we created. In the San Pascual, the wetlands is not operable and has not been, is overgrown. There are a lot of trees that are being tagged to be removed, just to clarify on that, and it's different because, as you heard, there's three different cities and there's two different sites. On the San Rafael site, we're only taking out six trees. They're elderberry. They're not very large. But on the lower side in the San Pascual, there are, I have the numbers right here, so I couldn't get them wrong. There are 121 trees that are being tasked being removed. 78% of them are non-native. They are mostly Mexican palm fans that are invasive and weed out other native species. They do grow very tall, so you heard over 50 feet. They're very tall. They don't provide ample shade because they grow tall and spindly, as we know, and they overuse and disrupt the natural ecology that's in that area. We do have a website. I know you have not had time to look at it. I do encourage you to look at it so you can hear more about the projects, but I'll try to cover just a few items. We haven't heard any support, but there is a tremendous amount of support for these projects within our cities that have come. The communities have seen what other cities do. So I heard the bacteria and the zinc. Jenny is sitting right here. Those are our major drivers in Los Angeles, specifically in Arroyo Seco. It's dry weather bacteria. So these projects were targeted and they were prioritized, especially in Pasadena. The outfall was noted as one of the four highest contributors for dry weather bacteria. So that was the impetus for the projects. Having worked at City of LA, there are other options we could do as a municipality, such as low-flow diversions, which is sending the water out of the river over to the sewer system and is lost to the ocean. And downstream of us, the other two priority outfalls for City of LA, that is indeed what the City of LA did. We do believe our cities did something above and beyond by keeping the water in, using nature-based solutions, working with our communities, although it is clear that we have missed some on our neighboring agency, to do something better ecologically. The communities actually have asked us, even though that large trees are being taken out in some areas, to start with very native natural seeds that are grown and propagated, and so our cities have taken this additional step that many municipalities don't take, to take seedlings and have them propagated, specifically ones that are developed in our area, so it will take longer to establish, but this was a community-driven request, and we did go ahead and adhere to that. So our cities are always looking to do more. We do have the compliance driver, and that is important, but our cities feel very strongly about the Arroyo Seco. It's very important to both of our cities. It is a very natural area, and we will continue to try to strive to do something ecologically irrelevant, and we really believed we did in this project. So, again, I encourage you guys to look at the website and happy to answer more questions so that we can clarify some of the concerns that we believe may be somewhat unrepresentative of the project in hand.
Okay. Yes, Vice Chair.
My questions are for staff, so I won't bother any of the presenters, other than to say to all of the presenters, thank you very, very much for coming and for talking to us and for giving us the various perspectives. I just wanted to emphasize, Board Member Christensen started her comment saying this is the first time we're hearing about this, and so we don't know what we don't know. So even though we're having this conversation, I just want to make it clear that nobody on this board is prejudging any of this. The item is not before us. But this is very helpful input that we're receiving. But you should take that input as just that, a conversation, not a judgment, because we don't have the item before us. So my question for staff is, when do we expect to hear this?
So the project applicant has submitted an application for a 401 water quality certification. The board has delegated that authority for that issuance of those type of approvals to the executive officer. So staff was not planning to bring this to the board, but an application has been submitted to staff, and we're currently reviewing it. But as you heard from the cities, they have paused. They put a pause on their application. We've asked them for I will ask our 401 program manager to come up and explain, but a more formal recall of their application.
Well, I think given what we've heard today, it does need to be brought to the board.
We can do that.
Yeah. And I'm also hoping that sufficient time will be given to the applicant and to the community to try to work out some of the differences that we've heard about today. I think that's very, very important that we hear that has been done. But when it does come back, one of the questions that I want to ask you, so how does this comply with the MS4 permit?
Sure.
So do you want to talk about that now, Jenny? Whatever you wish.
Oh, okay. Yes. So I just want to clarify that staff has met with Mr. Brick, has set up meetings with Mr. Forbes and the Keech tribe, and have met with the cities, and will continue to do that. It's the application is already out for public comment, and it's open for, until a certification is issued, if it is issued. So staff is going to meet with the stakeholders and the tribes to hear all their concerns before we decide whether to even recommend issuing a certification. Before you just requested that we bring it to the board, we were considering that when thinking about doing it under the EO's delegated authority, but we still, yes, we are going to continue and to work with all the parties. Regarding MS4 compliance, the regional board can't dictate the manner of compliance with its permits. We are not, this is not a required project under MS4. This is a project that the cities are proposing to comply with the MS4, and it's their choice. I do want to point out that staff posted a letter on our website for a similar project in August 2023, to kind of clarify for all the MS4 permittees the kinds of things that they'll need to consider when proposing these types of MS4 compliance projects. You know, this is the first one of many we expect to see of 401 water quality certification applications for diversions or park conversions or those types of projects. So we will evaluate them all on a case-by-case basis based on, you know, the facts and the information for each specific case. But it is part of a larger discussion. And so I just wanted to highlight that we've tried to provide guidance to MS4 permittees. And if it's okay, I'd just like to read this letter from our website, part of it. So in this letter, it was regarding a different diversion project, but we sent it out to all MS4 permittees so they would understand that the project may require a Clean Water Act Section 401 water quality certification. The impact of reduced flows on beneficial uses of the receiving water may be considered when evaluating the project purpose as part of the certification process. Projects that involve diversion to the sanitary sewer or that are diverted to be put to another use, for example, underground water storage or use, or for use as seawater intrusion barrier, may require a water right pursuant to Water Code Section 5101. And then we said, please note that diversion projects intended to address upstream discharges should be undertaken as a last resort to comply with receiving water limitations. Permittees should address stormwater and non-stormwater flows prior to their discharge into receiving waters. In addition, for diversions from the receiving water, permittees are still responsible for compliance with receiving water limitations above the point of diversion. So, with all that, we just wanted to make it clear, yes, it's the MS4 permittee's choice how they comply with the MS4 permit, but they should consider these factors.
Madam Chair, could I add one thing, if that is okay?
Yes, please.
So as I mentioned, this is a two-part project, though bacteria issues are, omnipresent across the Arroyo Seco, as most of Los Angeles River. The City of South Pasadena does not have a direct compliance point, but for the City of Pasadena, the load reduction strategy, as you know, which addresses the bacteria TMDL in the LA River. Our San Rafael project was submitted in 2016 to the regional board as the project was required to be identified for the load reduction strategy. So it was submitted to the board in a separate fashion through the load reduction strategy report of 2016 for the segment B tributaries. It has expanded in its scope to capture more and do more in nature-based, but it was submitted to the board at that time.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, Board Member Mendez.
Good morning, everyone, and I'd like to thank all the stakeholders, particularly the community, for coming in to speak with us about their concerns. As other previous board members stated, this is our first time hearing this, so it's trying to grapple with sort of both sides and the facts and the visualizations. We got a great overview from the community, but unfortunately, we didn't hear much from the city in terms of the scope and having those visualizations. So it's kind of hard for me to kind of understand that side of the two communities. I had a question for staff regarding the third city that's not here, City of Los Angeles, for that small portion. Have they taken a position? Are they active on this? There's a new council member in that CD14.
So staff just received this application in October, and we are currently still gathering information, and we are not even very far along in our analysis of the application package. The reason we noticed this item was because the Save San Pascual Park asked to come and speak before the board.
Sure.
And because it was a pending item, we needed to notice it. So we're still very early in the process.
Okay.
And as you heard, the city has put a pause on their application.
Which is good news, as they can reassess what to do next, and then I encourage the City of Los Angeles, particularly the new council members' office, to be active in this, and perhaps the community can make that introduction to this important project that you all stated. And just want to highlight, as we go forward with this, and a lot of the environmental justice and indigenous concerns, you know, historically when they're wanted, when a local government wants to do some type of public works project, it has been done in low-income communities on parks and some of the community assets for, you know, public school buildings, for other types of utility transfer stations or even transfer stations. So just trying to keep in mind as we go forward is having that equity lens and environmental justice and the concerns of the indigenous community as well. Thank you.
Yes, Board Member Ashia.
I just want to echo the comments that were made by my board colleagues, thanking everyone for coming today and presenting to us, especially the community members for coming and explaining the circumstances. And I appreciate the pause that is being placed on the project, perhaps to keep communicating with the community. And we'll hold any other comments until we've reviewed more materials and look forward to doing that in the future. So thank you all so much for being here today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Yes, and again, I want to thank everybody as well. And I'm really happy to hear that the cities are going to be willing to have further discussions with the community as well. So look forward to for our staff as being part of those discussions as well and to get solutions moving forward. But I thank you all for coming here today. And again, I totally agree that this particular project has to be elevated to the board level. There's appears to be a lot of community concern. On the other hand, too, my hope is that there will be ample discussion and agreement, and that maybe it won't have to come to the board level. But we shall see. But that is my hope. And I just wanted to also state, too, that as part of the county has established or adopted a county water plan, and I know that they've put together a blue ribbon committee to try to further define nature-based solutions, what that means, what are the components of that, what does that look like, so there can be more consistency in terms of defining and developing those types of projects as well. And so I think there's a need for that in the future, and it looks like we're going to be seeing a lot more of these projects. And so really good discussion, good feedback, and look forward to more discussion. And so with that, if there's not any other comments, we can go ahead and take a 10-minute break. Thank you very much. I believe we're ready to reconvene. It is 11:09 right now, and we're going to be moving towards the uncontested items. And so we have item number 8. And so that's the consideration of tentative waste discharge requirements and water reclamation requirements for the metabolic studio water treatment plant in LA. And so since this is uncontested, I'm going to ask for a motion and a second.
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
I'll second.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll have a, yeah, we'll have a, yes, yeah, so we have a motion and a second. Okay. And so I'll turn to Ms. Aguirre to take the roll call vote.
Board Member Ashian?
Yes.
Board Member Christensen?
Yes.
Chair Camacho?
Yes.
Vice Chair Nahai?
Yes.
Board Member Mendez?
Yes.
Yes.
The motion carries.
Thank you very much. And again, the motion was made by Board Member Christensen and seconded by Board Member Ashian, just for the record. And so we're going to move on to the contested items and item number 10. And so this is a consideration of tentative waste discharge requirements and MPDS permit renewal for the New Hall Ranch Sanitation District. And so before we start, I would like to administer the oath. And so we'll everyone testifying on item 10, please stand. And do you promise that the testimony you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? Please respond with I do or yes.
I do.
Okay, thank you. So we'll move forward with Mr. Stephen Webb with his presentation. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. All right. Good morning, Chair Camacho and members of the board. My name is Stephen Webb, and I'm the supervisor of the Municipal Permitting Unit. Also present with me today are Veronica Cuevas, the project engineer for this item, and Jong Hee Lim, the manager of the Watershed Regulatory Section. Item number 10 on today's agenda is a consideration for the renewal of the Waste Discharge Requirements and National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit, or NPDS permit, for the Newhall Ranch Sanitation District's Newhall Ranch Water Reclamation Plant, or Newhall Ranch WRP, to discharge tertiary treated effluent that will be partially treated by reverse osmosis to reach 5 of the Santa Clara River. Next slide. The Newhall Ranch WRP is a publicly owned treatment works, or POTW, that has not yet been constructed and will serve the new Newhall Ranch housing development in Santa Clarita, California. Although the first NPDS permit for the Newhall Ranch WRP was adopted in September of 2007, a downturn in the housing market and litigation associated with the environmental impact report for the phased housing development caused delays in construction of both the homes and the POTW. The Newhall Ranch WRP will be constructed off Route 126 near the Ventura and Los Angeles County border and will discharge up to 2.0 million gallons per day, or MDD, of tertiary treated effluent that will be partially treated by reverse osmosis to reach 5 of the upper Santa Clara River downstream of the Valencia WRP. The reach boundaries of the Santa Clara River are depicted by the gray diagonal dashed lines, and the proposed location of the Newhall Ranch WRP is depicted by the yellow arrow on the map. The Santa Clarita Valley Sanitation District and Newhall Land and Farming Company entered into an interconnection agreement that allows for the sewage generated by the first 5,999 dwelling units of the Newhall Ranch housing community to be temporarily treated at the Valencia WRP until the Newhall Ranch WRP is constructed. This agreement specifies that Newhall Land and Farming Company will design, fund, and construct all sewers, pumping plants, and force mains required to convey any sewage flow generated within the Newhall Ranch development to the Valencia WRP. The agreement also requires the Newhall Ranch WRP to be constructed by the time the 6,000th dwelling unit is constructed. Next slide. This is a simplified flow diagram that illustrates the proposed treatment process of the Newhall Ranch WRP. The preliminary design includes the following. Next slide. Grit removal and screening. Next slide. Step feed activated sludge with nitrification and denitrification. Next slide. Membrane bioreactor filtration. Next slide. And disinfection by ultraviolet light or UV light. Next slide. Biosolids will be transported to the Valencia WRP for treatment and disposal. In addition, the Newhall Ranch WRP will treat a side stream, next slide, by reverse osmosis, or RO, to further remove chloride. Next slide. The discharger proposes to dispose of the concentrated brine generated from the RO facility in one of two ways, either by trucking the brine to the A.K. Warren Water Resource Facility in Carson, California, and discharging it to the ocean under that facility's NPDES permit, or two, discharging the brine into a deep well if US EPA reissues the separate deep well injection permit. The permeate, or the clean water from the RO process, will be blended, next slide, with the remainder of the disinfected tertiary effluent to meet the chloride effluent limitation of 100 milligrams per liter. Prior to being discharged, next slide, into the Reach 5 of the Santa Clara River. During dry weather, only a small percentage of the treated effluent is projected to be discharged to the Santa Clara River. Next slide. Most of the effluent is anticipated to be recycled and used for irrigation purposes under separate water recycling requirements. Next slide. This slide highlights the major updates to the tentative order. Staff established a more stringent effluent limitation for cyanide based on an analysis conducted using data from the Valencia WRP collected between February 1st, 2019 and April 30th, 2024. This analysis is referred to the Reasonable Potential Analysis, or RPA, and is conducted as part of the renewal process following state and federal requirements. Staff also updated the effluent limitation and temperature from 86 degrees Fahrenheit to 80 degrees Fahrenheit based on the basin plan water quality objective. Staff also updated the monitoring of reporting program, including quarterly PFAS effluent monitoring, to be consistent with the US EPA's PFAS action plan, strategic roadmap, and guidelines. And finally, the pretreatment requirements were removed since the facility's design capacity is less than 5 MGD and no industrial users are planned to be discharged to the facility. Next slide. The public notice for the facility's tentative permit renewal was issued on September 16, 2024. The Los Angeles Water Board received two comment letters by the October 16, 2024 deadline, one from the discharger and a joint letter from the Santa Clarita Organization for Planning and Environment, or SCOPE, and Friends of the Santa Clara River, or FOSCR. In response to the comments received, staff revised the tentative order where appropriate and distributed the revised tentative order on November 7, 2024. All comments were addressed in the response to comments table in your board package, beginning on page 10-186. I will only summarize the major comments in the following slides. The Santa Ynez Band of Chumash Indians Tribal Elders Council also provided a letter on October 21st, 2024, that they are not requesting any further consultation on this item. Next slide. The key comments fall under these categories: the temperature effluent limitation, interim wastewater treatment before Newhall Ranch WRP is built, groundwater basin impacts from the discharge, and recycled water requirements for the Newhall Ranch WRP. Next slide. The first major comment is from the discharger and is regarding temperature. The discharger requests that the temperature effluent limitation of 80 degrees Fahrenheit be replaced with 86 degrees Fahrenheit, and that exceptions to the effluent and receiving water limitations be included when the ambient receiving water exceeds the effluent limitation, consistent with the previous permit. The discharger submitted a report in 2019 suggesting that 86 degrees Fahrenheit was protective of the receiving water quality objective, or WQO, that it would not raise the receiving water temperature above 80 degrees Fahrenheit, and that it was in compliance with the basin plan narrative WQO. The temperature water quality objective in Chapter 3 of the Basin Plan for water is designated warm, which is applicable to the Santa Clara River, states, water temperatures shall not be altered by more than 5 degrees Fahrenheit above the natural temperature, and at no time shall these warm designated waters be raised above 80 degrees Fahrenheit as a result of waste discharges. Order number R4-2019-0077 included a temperature effluent limitation of 86 degrees Fahrenheit based on a white paper addressing temperature in estuarine environments. However, the white paper is not relevant to freshwater and inland surface waters, which is the receiving water here, and continued reliance on the white paper to establish the temperature effluent limitation for the Newhall Ranch WRP may not result in compliance with the temperature water quality objective. The new temperature effluent limitation of 80 degrees Fahrenheit for the Newhall Ranch WRP is based on a new interpretation of this water quality objective, will help receiving water achieve the temperature water quality objective, and will ensure protection of the beneficial uses of the receiving waters. The report that the discharger submitted in March 2019 used temperature and flow data from between 2014 and to 2018 at nearby upstream and downstream stations to calculate flow-weighted averages. However, the report did not evaluate the potential impact that Newhall Ranch WRP's effluent discharge could have on aquatic life, and the report predates the current Santa Clara River temperature study that is currently being conducted related to the discharges from the Valencia and Saugus WRPs. It is premature to contemplate a temperature effluent limit greater than 80 degrees Fahrenheit for the Newhall Ranch WRP prior to the conclusion of the temperature study, because the temperature study will provide a more thorough temperature analysis that is more protective of the beneficial uses of the Santa Clara River than the analysis conducted in 2019 for the Newhall Ranch WRP discharge. It is inappropriate to provide exceptions to the temperature effluent limitation because the facility has not yet been constructed and the discharger still has the opportunity to consider design elements to ensure compliance with the temperature effluent limitation. The temperature limitation exceptions requested are also inappropriate because the temperature of the receiving water fluctuates throughout the day. Absent continuous receiving water monitoring data, it is not possible to determine how often the temperature of the effluent causes the temperature of the receiving water to exceed 80 degrees Fahrenheit. The temperature effluent limitation is a conservative end-of-pipe limitation to account for fluctuations in water temperature. The end-of-pipe 80 degree Fahrenheit limitation ensures the discharge from the Newhall Ranch WRP will not cause an exceedance of the temperatures above 80 degrees Fahrenheit in the receiving water. And this approach is consistent with all the MPDS permits adopted for POTWs that discharge to inland service waters in the Los Angeles region. Next slide. Scope and FOSCR requests that the Newhall Ranch WRP be built to treat the wastewater from the first 6,000 units of the Newhall Ranch development instead of sending it to the Valencia WRP for treatment. So the burden of costs are not borne to the existing ratepayers in Santa Clarita Valley Sanitation Districts, or SCVSD's service area. The Los Angeles Water Board's consideration is limited to the adoption of an MPDS permit for discharges to the Santa Clara River from the Newhall Ranch WRP. Addressing ratepayer costs is outside the scope of today's board action. Sections of the tentative orders fact sheet include background on the development and discuss agreements between the various agencies involved. However, the tentative order does not require the discharger to build the Newhall Ranch WRP at a specific time. It is estimated the construction of the Newhall Ranch WRP would commence in 2028 and startup would occur 2 years later in 2030. Newhall Ranch SD, or Sanitation District, and the SCVSD set their own agreements and have separate public review processes for the Newhall Ranch development itself. In addition, the temporary treatment of the sewage from the Newhall Ranch development is covered under a separate MPDS permit for the Valencia WRP. Next slide. Scope and FOSCR are also concerned that the treated effluent generated from treating the sewage from the first 6,000 units of the Newhall Ranch development at the Valencia WRP will impact the groundwater basins. They also assert that PFAS is a concern in groundwater wells in the Santa Clarita Valley. Since the Santa Clara River is unlined, the effluent from the Newhall Ranch WRP could impact the groundwater basin along the river's path. As a result, the tentative order includes effluent limitations that protect the groundwater recharge beneficial use of the receiving water. It also includes groundwater monitoring to develop a baseline data set that can be compared to data collected from future monitoring when the Newhall Ranch WRP is operational, but PFAS was not included. Semi-annual PFAS groundwater monitoring has been added to the revised tentative order to generate baseline PFAS data that could be used to determine any potential impacts of the discharge in the groundwater basin. The Newhall Ranch WRP is also required to meet the basin plan water quality objectives for all salts, chloride, TDS, boron, and sulfate, which ensures the discharge will not further contribute to exceedances of the water quality objectives for salts in the Santa Clara River. In addition, the Valencia WRP's reverse osmosis system is currently reducing, and the Newhall Ranch WRP's proposed reverse osmosis system will reduce a portion of the TDS load discharged to the Santa Clara River. Next slide. Scope and FOSCR also object to the Los Angeles Water Board deferring the issue of permitting the use of recycled water from the Newhall Ranch WRP to another order because they are concerned that the discharger will no longer have the incentive to recycle water once the facility begins discharging effluent to the Santa Clara River. The regulation of recycled water is outside the scope of the proposed revised tentative order, which authorizes only the discharge of effluent from the Newhall Ranch WRP to the Santa Clara River. It is a separate process to obtain authorization to use tertiary treated wastewater from the Newhall Ranch WRP for beneficial reuse, such as irrigation. The discharger will first need to submit a Title 22 engineering report to the State Water Resources Control Board Division of Drinking Water, or DDW. After DDW provides conditional approval of the Title 22 engineering report, The discharger may submit an application to the Los Angeles Water Board to authorize the use of recycled water through water reclamation requirements, or WRRs. Los Angeles Water Board will not authorize recycled water use under WRRs unless a Title 22 engineering report covering the proposed uses is first approved by DDW. Since the discharger has not yet finalized the design of the Newhall Ranch WRP, has not yet developed a Title 22 engineering report for the distribution and use of recycled water produced at the Newhall Ranch WRP, and has not submitted an application to use or distribute recycled water, it is not appropriate to provide requirements for the use of recycled water from the Newhall Ranch WRP at this time. Regarding the concern that the discharger will abandon the plant, abandon their plans to recycle the tertiary treated effluent from the facility, Newhall Land and Farming Company is currently installing the purple pipe infrastructure for the distribution of recycled water from the WRP to the Newhall Ranch development tracts. In addition, the Newhall Ranch development is already permitted to receive recycled water from the Valencia WRP through the enrollment of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency, or SCV Water Agency, to in order number WQ2016-0068-DDW, or the water reclamation requirements for recycled water use, or the general order, on April 7, 2020. SCV Water Agency utilizes recycled water from the Valencia WRP through managing the New Drop Project. Under the New Drop Project, as additional homes are built and sold in the Newhall Ranch development, occupants will generate wastewater that is collected and treated at the Valencia WRP. The New Drop Project will generate increasing amounts of recycled water available for reuse. SCV Water Agency will not recycle more water than is being generated from the Newhall Ranch development. Based on the amount of resources the discharger has already invested in the recycled water infrastructure, Los Angeles Water Board anticipates that SCV Water Agency would follow a similar process for distributing treated effluent from the Newhall Ranch WRP. Next slide. Now I'd like to discuss a change sheet that you should have received for item 10. The item was originally scheduled for board action last month, but since the November board meeting was canceled, the item was rescheduled for the December 19, 2024 board meeting today. A change sheet was prepared for your consideration to update the key dates in the revised tentative order to reflect the December 19, 2024 board meeting date. The first proposed change is found on your agenda page 10-016, or page 2 of the waste discharge requirements. In Table 3, the adoption date would range from November 21st, 2024 to December 19th, 2024. The effective date would change from February 1st, 2025 to March 1st, 2025. And the expiration date would change from January 31st, 2030 to February 28th, 2030. The last proposed change is found on the agenda, page 10-175, or page F68 of the fact sheet. Under section 9.3, the date of the public hearing would change from November 21st, 2024 to December 19th, 2024. Next slide. This slide provides an overview of the board's options regarding the revised tentative order. The board may adopt the revised tentative order for item 10 with the changes proposed in the change sheet as proposed by staff. The board may modify and adopt the revised tentative order as a logical outgrowth of the public comments received, or the board may choose to take no action today on the proposed revised tentative order and postpone the consideration for a future board meeting. Next slide. Los Angeles Water Board staff recommend that you adopt the revised tentative order with the change sheet as proposed for item 10, the Newhall Ranch Water Reclamation Plant. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we could move on to our speaker requests, and I have a request from Ms. Erica Bench from the LA County Sanitation District.
Good morning, Chair Camacho and other members of the board. My name is Erica Bench, and I'm a reuse and compliance manager for the Los Angeles County Sanitation Districts. I would just like to make a quick statement to say that the sanitation districts support this renewal process of are supportive of the staff recommendation for this MPDS permit.
And we would also like to express our appreciation of the renewal process and all of the staff's open communication and responsiveness. We really appreciate that, and we feel that they have developed a permit that is protective of beneficial uses, water quality, and it is also achievable in practice. Thank you very much, and I'm here for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. And I also have a virtual commenter, Ms. Lynn Plambeck, who represents Scope. So if we could bring her on virtually.
Hi, Lynn Plambeck, Santa Clarita Organization for Planning and the Environment. First, I'd like to thank staff for always making sure that we are included and for carefully addressing our concerns. It's very good to work with the board. We fully support the lowering of the level to 80 degrees. We've been working on that for a long time. We've been commenting on this permit since 2007, since the original one, and we've commented on the Valencia plant many times, which had a higher level. And, you know, I live in the area, and I have seen the river steaming in the wintertime. So it's really important that we get the temperature levels down, and especially in a new plant. And it sounds like the sanitation department has already, I mean, the sanitation district has already agreed to that. So that's fine. And I'd also like to just say that we appreciate the board, including PFAS. 40% of the wells are down in the Santa Clarita Valley due to PFAS, and some of them are still producing at levels below notification requirements. So it's important that we make sure that's not in the water that goes into the river. I'm a little confused about including Landmark and Mission. You know, the sanitation district made a special note to please make sure that Landmark and Mission were included in the Newhall Ranch sanitation permit. And it's a little confusing to me why they would do this, because as you heard, the first 6,000 units or 5,999 are going to the Valencia treatment plant. And supposedly that's temporary, but by the time you've built all the pump stations and the pipes and everything to get it there, and you have put in the purple pipe to get it delivered to the Mission project, which is the first one that's being built and many of the homes are occupied now, it doesn't seem like it's going to be going away after that. Why would you just all of a sudden move all the infrastructure and abandon it? So I just would like to ask the regional board to be sure and look at that issue as it comes up in the future. It's certainly not here yet due to the Chiquita Canyon landfill. Landmark Village appears not to be being built, and they have asked that it be their permits be delayed until 2028. So it's going to be a while, I guess. And anyway, thank you again, and thank you particularly for standing strong on the temperature requirements.
Thank you, Ms. Plambeck. Are there any other commenters virtually? And if not, we'll go to the board for questions. And so, Board Member Mendez, do you have any questions? Vice Chair?
Thank you. But no.
Okay. And Board Member Christensen or Board Member Ostion? No, not at this point. I just had a couple of questions, if I could, for staff. Yeah, you talked about the Santa Clara River temperature study completion, or it's ongoing. I'm just wondering what the status of that, and when will that be complete?
Well, so yeah, the study dates are all outlined in the Valencia and Saugus Water Reclamation Plant MPDS permits, but we... The study is currently ongoing, and they just presented yesterday to us some of the study results that have been coming out. And I think it's going to be another couple years. Yeah, I think it's another couple years before there's actually a final report that comes out of this.
Hi. It is February of 2026 that we are, one of our milestones is to project to, present to the regional board our project.
Mm-hmm. Great to hear. And then just one other question. You talk about the baseline groundwater monitoring that needs to be conducted. When is that going to be started, since there's kind of a delay?
Right, yeah, so this permit now requires them to start doing quarterly monitoring once the permit is adopted or becomes effective. The previous permit didn't require them to do the groundwater monitoring, so now we're going to start to get a baseline. So before we have the plant in place, we'll have the baseline data.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Yes.
I have just one question for you. I think in your presentation, you said that construction is expected to commence in 2028 and be completed by 2030. What is that statement based on? Is it the company's projections that by 2030 they will get to the 6,000 unit threshold?
Yeah, yeah. It's based on the information that they provided us in the application. And yeah, they need to have that the Newhall Ranch WRP built by that 6,000th dwelling unit being built. So that's the projected timeline for the development. But this development has been delayed many times.
Yeah.
So
it's, yes, no, yeah. I'm aware. So yeah, I mean, I was just wondering because you said it, mm-hmm. and so I was wondering what that was based on.
Yeah.
But thank you very much. That's it from me.
Yeah, and I don't see any other questions or comments, and so I think we're ready for a motion and a second. So, who would like to make a motion? Oh. Vice Chair. And the second, okay, Board Member Mendez, we have a motion and a second. And so, Ms. Aguirre, can we take the roll call?
Board Member Ashton?
Yes.
Board Member Christensen?
Yes.
Chair Camacho?
Yes.
Vice Chair Nahai?
Yes.
And Board Member Mendez?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. And thank you for all who came today. And good luck with the project. And so we do have a closed session coming up, so I'm going to turn to legal counsel to announce what's going to be discussed in closed session.
We're going to be meeting in closed session to discuss items 12E and 12F, which relate to the Benjamin Moore and Company, Inc. versus the California Regional Water Quality Control Board litigation, as well as the parents against, you know what, it's not F, I'm doing the wrong one. G, got my wrong SSFL. The Boeing Company versus the Regional Water Quality Control Board litigation related to Santa Susana.
Okay, so we're expecting the closed session to start, I'll say about 11:50 to give us time to get to the library in the second floor. And then after closed session, then we will be adjourning at that point in time. And so let's see, how long do we think closed session will take approximately?
Probably no more than 30 minutes.
Okay. And so just to remind everybody that our next board meeting is going to be scheduled, our regular board meeting is going to be February 27th, 2025, here at this board office in the Carmel Room. And we are going to be holding our annual retreat on January 23rd, 2025 at 9 a.m. And so look forward to seeing everybody there. And everyone, happy holidays.
And just to clarify that this concludes the webcast portion of the meeting.
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Okay, we are adjourning to closed session.